UN had established a deadline of 2030 to eradicate modern slavery in the world. And, you know, as we hit 2025, all the measures indicate we're headed in the wrong direction. And so our focus is, how do you bring technology to this problem to try to win the war on forced labor and modern slavery? We may be buying a motherboard from someone who's then buying certain chipsets from someone else, and that chipset provider is buying individual parts down here, and then all those people are getting raw ingredients further down the chain. So how do you go all the way down the chain? And look, what we know is folks who are involved in forced labor, they're in it for the money. If we can disrupt the economics of that, we can change the game.
Well, I want to welcome everyone back to the Green Hour. We are here at the Concordia Annual Summit during Climate Week, New York City. I'm sitting here with John Schultz, Chief Operating and Legal Officer at Hewlett Packard Enterprise. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I guess the first thing I want to understand is your role at HP. Could you talk through that and what your day-to-day looks like?
Yeah. So I've been the Chief Operating Officer for about 5 years. It's not your traditional Chief Operating Officer in terms of running product or running supply chain. It's really been more of a transformation role, whether it's creating new business models and technology platforms and bringing them to life, IT transformation, e-commerce, and most recently, we closed a large transaction. And so it's the integration of that. So I've been really more on the transformation side of operations. But one of the things that's core to what we do is what we call Living Progress, which is our organization that focuses on our principle of advancing the way people live and work. Mm. And so that's what brings me to things like the Concordia Summit to talk about our world, our work in trying to eradicate forced labor and modern slavery.
Yeah, one of my first questions I have, I mean, you say we're losing the war on modern slavery. You know, why is urgency increasing and what role is Hewlett-Packard Enterprise playing in addressing this global crisis?
Well, the UN had established a deadline of 2030 to eradicate modern slavery in the world. And, you know, as we hit 2025, all the measures indicate we're headed in the wrong direction. It's actually getting worse, not getting better. And, you know, frankly, part of it is awareness. There's a large number of people, including companies, who don't know that slavery still exists. They think, you know, hey, that was an 18th century problem, you know. But for example, just a couple of months ago, you know, the story broke about tens of workers in a McDonald's in London who'd been trafficked in by an Eastern European gang, made to work there. All their paychecks went into a bank account controlled by the gang, and all of these people lived in horrendous conditions, you know, in a building in London, right? Mm. So you're walking into a McDonald's and you have no idea that person's in forced labor, or you're going to get your nails done and you don't realize that the people who are actually doing your nails have been trafficked in, they're working in slave conditions, and there's one person walking around making sure they're continuously working and not telling you that, in fact, they're engaged in forced labor. So it's not just garments, it's not just fishing, it's not a problem that's just in some part of Asia or some part of Africa, right? It's happening in every country in the world. So we've been focused on this, looking at it from the supply chain perspective, you know, how our products are built, how are the raw ingredients are sourced, et cetera. And as we started to discover that this problem is getting worse, not getting better, we saw this as an area that really we needed to jump in and try to make an impact. And so our focus is, how do you bring technology to this problem to try to win the war on forced labor and modern slavery?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask, that begs the question, you know, how does technology play a role, maybe AI play a role in the traceability of this? Because that example you gave at McDonald's, it's like, how do we figure that out?
Yeah, well, that's an example of, right, if somehow someone had been able to triangulate that all these people were going back to the same house, or that all the money was going into the same bank account.
Right.
If McDonald's had looked at it and said, why is the money for 10 or 20 workers in McDonald's all going to the same bank account, right? Little things like that. Our view is that if we can get data into the hands of all the people who are already doing great work, we can make them more impactful as they generate insights amongst themselves. One of the problems that we see is lots of great organizations doing great work, but they're operating in silos. And they're just assuming, hey, if I do a great job here and you do a great job here, somehow it's going to fix the problem. Reality, it doesn't. And so we've launched with the World Economic Forum, a global data partnership that's intended to create a very simple architecture that allows people to share data while retaining their own data sovereignty by putting AI on top of that data and allowing them to drive insights. So the example I use is we have a supply chain. We know who we're dealing with, let's say, in Thailand, and we may know some of the individual names, not just the companies and the like. If we had an AI tool that was looking at all the data that's available from the government, from individual NGOs, to see, does that supplier's name pop up somewhere? Does that individual's name pop up somewhere? And oh, turns out they were arrested for trafficking, or they were suspicious, you know, there was suspicion of them doing XYZ. All of a sudden, in real time, we're learning about it. We can take action and there can be immediate consequence, right? So this data sharing with AI on top, I think will allow us to generate far greater insights and allow everyone who's already operating just to be more impactful.
Yeah, I think the supply chain is becoming more and more important. Yep. And we look at scopes of emissions, right? Scope 3 emissions are like the big topic right
That's
now.
Right.
And it's like companies are trying to figure out how can we reduce scope 3 emissions as much as we can.
So in the modern slavery space, the equivalent is how do you keep going further and further down levels of the supply chain? In the electronics industry, right, there are products we put out that have tens of thousands of parts, right?
That's complicated supply chain.
It's just a complicated supply chain. We're not buying each of those parts individually, right? We may be buying a motherboard from someone who's then buying certain chipsets from someone else. And that chipset provider is buying individual parts down here. And then all of those people are getting raw ingredients further down the chain. So how do you go all the way down the chain? Information sharing, AI, we think can really unlock the potential here to have much more robust a scrutiny and oversight of your supply chain. And look, what we know is folks who are involved in forced labor, they're in it for the money. If we can disrupt the economics of that, we can change the game.
So do y'all employ any kind of supplier code of conduct, let's say policy or framework when you're going with your supply chain?
We do. And there is a Responsible Business Alliance that's put out certain certain guidelines and will share in audits and the like. So there's a great level of cooperation and our standards and the like. Mm. But what we know is, notwithstanding all of that, we're still losing.
Right.
We're still losing. And so we've got to find a way to make all of that more effective. And our view is that really comes by having more data shared and get it out of the silos and then bring AI on top to drive the insights. So we've got standards. We've got folks operating in company, in country, trying to free folks or folks trying to do enforcement. But it's right now, it's just not enough.
So another note I have down is Hewlett-Packard Enterprise ranks first among ICT firms in the corporate human rights benchmark. What practices and policy commitments have helped the organization lead on human rights?
Well, we're very proud of our record, of course, and it really traces back to our founders, Dave Packard and Bill Hewlett, who really instilled that ethos into the workforce. So we have a culture of wanting to help advance the way people live and work. And there are a lot of things that we do. But at the end of the day, what I would say is we don't do it for ratings and rankings, and we don't do it to pat ourselves on the back. We do it by seeing problems and going off and trying to solve them, right? And if you do that, I think it almost just works its way through the culture, right? First of all, we have to be a living example. So we're not ashamed to say that when we go and look at our supply chain from time to time, we will find practices that are not in keeping with the standards that apply, right? But a good organization continues to go look, doesn't sit there and say, well, I want to stop looking because this might be embarrassing,
right?
So it's having that cultural ethos. But I do think it really comes down to the fact that the average person at Hewlett-Packard Enterprise believes that technology can solve many of the world's problems. They get excited by that. And that really just drives the culture that allows us to be recognized in the way. So we're proud of it, but that's not why we do it.
Right. Now, I did want to pivot. We were talking about circularity before this conversation started, right? I didn't have it in the agenda, but yeah. I did want to discuss it because I think circularity is a big
huge
thing, right?
Issue.
And I work in it in my day-to-day job. And what you were discussing with the data yes. centers and the servers, bringing those back, could you talk about that yeah. and circularity in the business?
So for circularity for us really starts with, we have to build more energy efficient products, right? We want our products to use as little energy as possible and to be as sustainable as possible,
right?
So you have to design in not just energy efficiency, but the ability of these products to be refurbished and to be reused, right? Recycling's great, but recycling isn't nearly as good as reuse.
Right.
Refurbishment and reuse, right? So it starts with the design and then the practices that come along with it. In our case, we have two of the world's biggest electronic refurbishment centers, one in Andover, Massachusetts, one in Erskine, Scotland. You take back millions of pieces of data center equipment annually. We refurbish them, and then we resell them. Because while the most sophisticated companies in the world may need the first generation, they're kind of the gamers of right. the corporate world. The reality is average users like myself who don't do gaming don't need the fastest, don't need the latest. I need something that just allows me to do what I'm doing. And so there's a whole market for that. And as you can imagine, it's so much better for the environment if you're refurbishing. So design for sustainability, and then have the practices that allow you to get it back efficiently, refurbish it, and find that next market. And so we're really proud of what we're doing there. And that to us is the full sort of circularity. By the way, that means you're not looking for new silicon, you're not looking for new tungsten, you're not looking for
the mining aspect is out of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You've taken it fully out of it.
Yeah. So I mean, if we look at the waste hierarchy, to your point, yeah, reuse is the best. Refurbishment's better.
Yeah.
Because you don't have processing,
right?
Mechanical recycling, chemical recycling, whatever
exactly
you're using.
Right.
So, and then the mining component is out when you keep things in the circular economy.
Absolutely.
So I'm interested, how do you know when these data center technology is at end of life?
Yeah.
Is there trackers on it? How does it work?
So a lot of it is leased equipment.
Okay.
Through our financing company, they're going to track the life of it. And then they're going to take it back at the end of the lease, refurbish it, and then sell it or lease it again. In some instances, it's not equipment that we leased in the first instance, but it's somebody who's a customer that says, I want to refurbish my data center. We'll go in, we'll look at it and say, it's not even our gear. Mm. It might be a competitor's gear, but you know what? We'll take it back. We'll give you some value for it because that's value after we refurbish it. It allows you to have money to go buy the new stuff. And in the meantime, we refurbish it, we sell it, somebody else gets to use it. So a great circularity, but it's a win for the customer. Because they're actually getting value out of stuff that they no longer want to use. So lots of different ways this happens. It's been a growing, thriving business for us. We have talked about it a number of times at the World Economic Forum on the circular economy. Certainly something we're proud of. And we really think we're a leader in this when it comes to enterprise technology.
Well, the economics make a lot of sense, too, because
the
client doesn't have to pay for landfill or whatever else
That's
to
exactly
actually dispose
right.
of the product.
That's exactly right. And, you know, we believe that our team is really top notch in terms of understanding the value so that the customers get full value for it, being able to do the refurbishment and then get it into the hands of people who can use it next.
So would that be considered a product as a service model?
Yeah, for the most part.
Okay.
I mean, in some ways, you could say it that way. Yeah, absolutely.
So I think final question I'll have for you, for any company that's going to listen to this and watch this and be like, hey, I want to follow the lead that Hewlett-Packard is showing on human rights, modern slavery. What's one thing that you would say to them?
Yeah. I think it's a lot easier than maybe some people and a lot less scary than some people think.
Right.
I do think that there are times where people are worried that they're going to be the victim of a name and shame. And if they start looking, they're going to find something that they're not proud of. And, oh, how am I going to handle that or the like? Or am I going to put myself up on a perch and there's all these people just looking to knock my pedestal out and tear me down? We've been doing this for a long time and we've not seen any of that. To the contrary, I think the mood and the focus around business has changed from that name and shame to, we're glad you're in the fight with us, and how do we work together? So I don't think it's as hard or as scary. You need to get in the game, right? Otherwise, I think downstream, the game will come to you in a way you don't want it
to
come
exactly
to you.
That's exactly right.
Right?
The legal aspect.
So I think there's absolutely. So I think it's the smart choice. And I think it's the right choice. And like I said, I'm sensing the momentum. So I'm very positive about kind of where that aspect's going, even when we see some other things that maybe would make us a little less positive.
Well, John, I can't thank you enough for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it. Thank you.